This is the DRF Players Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the June 10th edition of the DRF Players Podcast. It's your Belmont Stakes Day edition of the pod. I'm your host, Peter Thomas Fornital, back with you, joined by the usual crew, Mike Hogan and Jonathan Kinchin. Gentlemen, starting with you, Jonathan, how is your Belmont week going so far?
Well, I'm a little bit jealous. I've gotten way too many like text messages from the New York metropolitan area of friends that are, and looks like they're enjoying themselves, and pictures and all kinds of stuff, and I'm here in Austin, Texas, but I can't complain. I didn't miss too many dances last year. Made an executive decision to miss this one, but I'll be back on the road in no time.
Mike, how about you? You plan on getting out there today or tomorrow?
Well, the news that Jonathan Kinchin is not going to be there makes me much less likely to make the trek out. You know, I mean, what's the point now? No Triple Crown, no Jonathan Kinchin?
I was out there yesterday, and it was a really fun day because it's just you get people descending from every corner of the country showing up, whether it's just to see the Belmont Stakes itself at beautiful Belmont Park, or they're specifically there to play in this contest, which had a late rash of entries that it's now going to be, I think, 50 or 51 people playing in the Belmont Stakes Betting Challenge. So all these people from all over the country, I see them, I expect them to say, hey, Pete, great job on the podcast, nice job covering the tournament world, something along those lines. In fact, all anybody said to me was, hey, man, where's Jonathan? Where's Jonathan? So, like, by the third or fourth time of where's Jonathan, I feigned indifference. I have no idea. And then it got so bad after the eighth or ninth time, I just told somebody, look, I don't know where he is, and I don't care.
Oh, geez.
In truth, it was a very fun day out there yesterday. Spent the afternoon hanging with Nikki the Boss and Philly Joe up in the turf club or whatever you want to call it. You know, I don't know the name of that restaurant on the fourth floor, but it's a very relaxing place to watch the races, and it was a really fun day. I mean, it wasn't betting very seriously. It was more of a social day. Good to see everybody, and I was supposed to head back out there today, but unfortunately, I woke up with, the sniffles. I'm, coughing. I'm feeling half under the weather. After two late nights in a row with a lot of stuff going on today, still a lot of handicapping to do, and knowing what tomorrow has in store, I decided actually to scratch myself from heading out there today, and I'm just going to stay in the office. I'm going to watch. I'm going to work. I'm going to get everything taken care of, do all my homework, you know, make my list, check it twice for tomorrow, and hope that works out. So a little disappointing not to see more friends out there today. And I did want to also extend a special thank you to NYRA's Director of Communications, Pat McKenna, who had arranged it where initially I was going to be doing the show not from the bunker in Brooklyn, but actually from high atop Belmont Park in the, I think it was technically the placing judges area. I was going to sit there, be looking out at Big Sandy, checking out the swallows as they swarm around there in front of the grandstand. It was going to be really cool. I guess with the magic of radio, I could have pretended, but, you know, that's not my style. I'm underground today, not going to be out there at Belmont Park. But I will be there in full force tomorrow. That's something I haven't missed in a very long time and certainly don't plan on missing anytime soon. That's right, friends and relatives listening, don't get any ideas about getting married or dying on Belmont weekend. It's sacred. All right, so today's show, the late week shows have been a little different lately. We've been talking a lot, and we haven't been handicapping all that much. Today, I think we should really devote a giant chunk of time to handicapping, because these races, I just went over, got up early today and have just been looking at the pick four on Belmont Day. They're just such a pleasure to look at. There's so much meat on the bones here, so much to talk about that if it's all right with you guys, I say we just spend the whole show doing that. I had some other topics planned, but we can just put a pin in them and bring them back for next week. Does that sound good to you, Mike?
I love it. Excellent. Let's do it.
And if you can't get if you don't get enough handicapping in this show, I highly recommend you tune in. You'll be listening to the replay at that point. You won't be able to hear the show and also attend this webinar that we're doing at 11 a.m. Eastern today. Logistically, I don't think that'll work out. But that will be archived, drf.com/YouTube. We're going to have Mike Beer, DRF's accomplished New York handicapper, and we're going to have Andy Beyer back for the third of the three Triple Crown races. Andy's done a fantastic job breaking down the first two legs of the Triple Crown, and I'm sure he's going to have more interesting stuff for him today and a fascinating running of the Belmont Stakes, so you'll want to check that out. Before we get started, Mike, what's going on at the office? Is there any particular events of interest this week with everybody in from all over the country and all the excitement surrounding this year's Belmont Stakes?
Well, if everybody's in, and I know they're all in for the Belmont, I haven't seen anybody make their way down to Midtown Manhattan. I think they're hanging close to Belmont. Based on what I see from Jay Privman's Twitter feed, I think he's living at King Umberto's. So nobody's really making nobody's really making their way like a block away from Grand Central, because that's not where the action is.
Well, I thought with the draw the other day, I had heard that Marcus Hirsch was around and some other folks were around. I had the pleasure of hanging out with him the other night in Brooklyn. It was kind of fun. We had representatives of a lot of different industry stakeholders, including Twin Spires and the Blood Horse and Daily Racing Form, and yet, you know, no fists were thrown, no barbs exchanged. Very civil dining experience out in Brooklyn with a diverse cast of industry folks, which was fun. Well, I'm going to miss out on the fun today, but there's going to be so much fun tomorrow. It's going to start in terms of the races we'll be talking about today and the publichandicapper.com races with race 8 at Belmont on Saturday. It's the Grade 1 Just a Game. Jonathan, we'll start with you. What are your thoughts on this one?
I just hope that Taylor Saval wins the 7th and I'm alive in the pick 3 or the double or whatever multi-race bet starts with the Woody Stevens. I don't know. It is a really tough race, and you think that if there wasn't a race in Ascot coming up soon, it would be a really easy race, and so that's what makes it really tough with Tepin being gone. I think a lot of these connections thought, hey, why not send our horse here for a $700,000 race? And so, I mean, this is going to be a spread race for me. I guess if I was playing in a tournament, I would pick one of the Chads and see who's the longest, whether it's Reina de Viteria or Miss McDougal, see who's longer there. And then, you know, Lexi Lou is interesting to me as well. I've always thought she was pretty special. And I tried, you know, I've talked about this before. When I try to beat a horse in their previous race and then they prove me wrong, they have my attention moving forward, and that's exactly what happened. I tried to beat Lexi Lou at Woodbine, and now she shows up back here for the Cassies, and she's one that I definitely would take a look at as well.
So those would be your three A horses, you think, if you're talking about approaching this in a pick four? Would you have anybody else up at that higher level, or would the rest?
Oh no, this is like a 5 or 6 A horse type of situation. I think, you know, especially with liking prices surrounding it. I mean, I don't hit the all button, but I think Strike Charmer has a case to be an A horse. Recepta, with the trouble that she had in the race with Strike Charmer. My Miss Sophia. You know, when you have speed in New York on the turf, it's always dangerous, especially when there's really no, you know, they can always get loose on you. There's a million. Celestine I could use. I might have to hit the all button, to be honest, even though I'll at least toss one horse. But it's tough.
I thought that was against your religion. Mike, maybe you can help us clarify the Just a Game a little bit.
Well, Jonathan better hit the all button because he hasn't even named the winner.
Who do you like?
That's number 13, Lady Lara. I tossed that last start. If you look at the chart, watch the replay. That's the definition of a carousel race in the Honey Fox. Celestine went wire to wire. Mississippi Delta sat second. She stayed that way. They basically just ran around the track. Meanwhile, Lady Lara, as your 2-1 favorite in there, was widest of all on the second turn when the rails were out at 84 feet. She had no chance to close into that pace where nobody backed up. I think she's going to get a good trip here from the outside. It's back to a one-turn race for her, back to a little bit firmer turf, hopefully. She's a really, really good mare, and I think she's absolutely – I don't know if she's a stone-cold winner, but she's absolutely going to outrun that 15-1 morning line.
What are you thinking in terms of a multi-race exotic strategy, Mike? Are you happy to just stand with Lady Lara, or are you going to use other A's and or backups here?
Well, it depends on your goals for this pick four, and it depends on your budget as well. I mean, I'm with Jonathan, and I think saying this about the Just a Game can apply to really just about every one of the races in this pick four. It's an all grade one pick four, starting in race eight, ending in the Belmont. And I think you can make cases for a lot of them. I think Recepta was clearly the best in the Bogey, but I think a lot of people are going to notice that, and her price might not be as appealing. But if you're looking to make sure you get through, you got to spread and use probably close to half the field. That said, if you don't have the budget to go real big in all the legs, you know, I would be happy taking a stand with some horses like Lady Lara, like maybe Recepta, who was probably the best in the Bogey, and Tubac was racing against, you know, the aforementioned Tepin. You know, I'd take stands with some of those if I was trying to save a little money and try and beat some of the bigger favorites.
For me, I'm the two horses Mike spent some time talking about are at the top of my list. Recepta not just sawed off last time in the Bogey to run on well, but also got totally sawed off in the Jenny Wiley. But this is a case where, because of the depth of the field, I hope Mike's wrong that she's going to attract too much wagering attention. I can't see a world in which she'd be any less than 4-1 here, and I wouldn't be surprised at all if she were twice that price, 8-1 above her morning line when it's all said and done. She's got to be an A for me. Lady Lara also, I think she's got some of the best late speed in the race. That's one of the things that wins turf races. Mike made all the points about the Honey Fox, but I mean, she's got flow upgrades throughout her PPs, and she's one I have to use. The other one I'm going to use that I wouldn't be surprised if people sleep on, but I think has plenty of ability, is the 9 Irish Rookie. I was doing some investigating on her last race from the Curra on soft ground. She managed to come home in just over 36 seconds for the last 3 furlongs. That's faster than it seems when you're talking about soft ground and thinking about how soft it was based on what the final time was there. She was one who was considered for the Breeders' Cup last year. I did find some odd quotes from the trainer, Martin Mead, about not being certain how she really liked the firm ground that she ran on at Newmarket last October. But when you look at her PPs, that was her best race, I think. So I think she likes it just fine. And the last time also, the winner was very much near the pace the whole time, whereas she came from further back. I think there's a lot to like here. I think Irad suits her nicely, and I'm hoping we get a real big price. Do you guys think I'm nuts about Irish Rookie, or do you see the case there?
I can see it. I mean, I can see a case for pretty much every horse in this race. And let me. You're right. I don't think Recepta is necessarily going to be favored. I think my point was, even though she finished third in the Bogey, she'll be the shortest of the three that are running back here in the Just a Game. That was more my point. I think she's going to take more money than the two that finished ahead of her. But you're right. I mean, why not take one with some form overseas who... you know, maybe that new face that might get a little overlooked. I'm not going to knock you for taking a shot with a filly like that.
All right. Yeah, so I'm going to try to get – oh, you had something there, Jonathan?
Yeah, I just wanted to point out that it's – I think it's pretty important to notice that Irad shows up there. He won on Strike Charmer last time with a brilliant ride, so there's no way they took him off because he did something wrong. And now Joel's there, and so I think that's interesting.
It is interesting. There's probably a story there, some sort of wire crossed, or somebody was going to a different spot and a commitment was made situation, I'm guessing. But Steve Rushing, a Rod's agent, obviously does a great job, and I think he's certainly sitting on one who's live. So let's just recap some numbers for this race. I want to get back in the habit of doing that. For me, I'm going to look at 2, 9, and 13. That's Recepta, that is Irish Rookie, and that's Lady Lara. Mike sounded like he was all about number 13, Lady Lara, with the possibility of backing up extensively, but really if you were making a pick, it sounds like that would be your pick. Mm-hmm. And Jonathan, yep. If you were limited to 1, 2, or 3 selections for the purposes of this race, what recap for us what those would be.
If I had to take 3, give me 4. I would take...
you can take 4.
I would take 1, Strike Charmer, 5, My Miss Sophia, 7, Miss McDougal, and 12, Reina de Bateria.
All right, there we go. There you have it, folks.
Before we move on, I do want to just quickly say one thing about a ridiculous long shot in here, number 6, Prize Exhibit, who, if you watch that last race, basically never got a chance to run at all while kind of hemmed in on the rail. In the stretch, was blocked a couple times, then basically just gave up the running. Now is shipping all the way out from Santa Anita to Belmont, gets the Flavian Pratt aboard, who's never ridden her before, but she's got some good back class, and if she runs one of her better races, I wouldn't be surprised if she outruns her odds. She's going to be a huge price.
I don't even think she's the best Jim Cassidy horse in the race. What do I know? Let's move on to the ninth. It is the Met Mile. It is a grade one. While it doesn't quite have all the star power that last year's jam-packed edition of this race had, it is a fascinating handicapping contest. Mike, let's start with you. Where did you land in the Met Mile?
The Met Mile is probably, of the four, for me, even though we talked about how wide open the Just a Game is, I think the Met Mile might be the most wide open of any race on the card. You know, Frosted is going to sit as your likely favorite, but I don't think he needs to win this race, and I think he might be even a little bit better going two turns. I think they have bigger goals in mind here. That's it. I mean, if he runs his race, he might be the best horse, and maybe everybody else is running for second. But it's interesting to me that Godolphin has an uncoupled entry. Of course, there are no coupled entries anymore in stakes races on the Naira circuit. So there's a horse in there that they've got as well, that I've always been interested in from even before he started. I'd heard so many great things about Marking. They sent him over to Dubai. He didn't really run all that well in the Godolphin Mile. They brought him back. He's working seemingly really well. I'm curious to see if we have anything on the clocker for him. Probably not, because he's been working up at Saratoga recently. But he's one I think is perhaps going to sit a good trip now that there are a couple scratches here. He draws a couple further in. He'll be in the 11 post, even though he's number 13. He's one that I think is going to be really interesting, and I think he's well suited for this one turn mile. So I really like him quite a bit.
Who are those scratches?
The scratches, you may not have heard. I guess you hadn't. El Kabir is going to not run. I can't remember which race they're targeting, but they're targeting a different race for him. And Jeremy Noseda had tweeted out earlier today that Sloan Avenue had a quarter crack and he wasn't going to be able to run.
Gotcha. All right. Jonathan, where did you land here?
Whew, this is another tough one. I like Calculator. A lot of people make fun of my California love, but that horse is game. He's, you know, if you look at his past performances, he's always run well. I think maybe this is something he's always wanted to do, is this one turn mile. I think a lot of these horses can kind of move up on in this situation. The one turn mile is something that a lot of horses don't get an opportunity to do, and when they do, sometimes they really relish it. I think I'm going to use a lot of Calculator. Like I said, I think he's sitting on a big race, and then Upstart is one of those horses that I feel like when you're watching racing and you see horses that are always in position but they just don't seem to finish and they kind of flatten out, those are the types of horses that I want cutting back. And for that reason, I think Upstart's going to be extremely dangerous. I think he'll be a little bit forgotten. He had an interesting spring down at Oaklawn. Felt like he was kind of against the track once. He was against the pace once. And that could be one that, you know, that I think could move forward cutting back.
What do you make of adding the blinkers? Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I wish they wouldn't have done that. I think that's like, you know, Nick, actually my buddy Nick Tamro and I talked about it yesterday. It just feels like one of those, I like, you know, and he kind of coached me up on this. I like cutbacks. I love cutbacks, but cutbacks and then adding blinkers, it's like, it's almost like it's like, it's a fearful thing. Like, oh, we're going to cut him back. We don't think he's fast enough to keep up. It's just like, he's fine. Just cut him back and let him run. But I'm not a horse trainer, so what the heck do I know? But
yeah, I love cutbacks too, but not when you then have like several weeks of layoffs. You know, I think a cutback, I think the logic of a cutback helping a horse is adding that fitness. So like then maybe within 30 days or, gosh, in the modern game, maybe even 45 days, I think that there's a logic to why a cutback's going to help a horse. I don't think there's logic to why a cutback's going to help a horse when they then have a 2-month layoff. Just personally.
Well, I think that there's two ways to look at how a cutback can be advantageous, right? I think there's the fitness standpoint where they're cutting back so they're going to be finishing, and then I think there's like a horse style profile cutback that the way the horse runs and the way that the horse travels and how far the distance limitations of the horse and so on and so forth is another angle of the cutback, and that's kind of the angle that I'm looking at here is that this horse just might enjoy the one turn mile cutting back instead of trying to get, you know, the mile and a 16th, the mile and an eighth, and so on.
That segues to the next thing I was actually going to ask, which is let's talk for a minute about the one turn mile, because you, Jonathan, especially with a horse we'll be talking about a little later in the show, you've been so insistent that you think he's a one turn horse, and I have some theories on the difference between what a one-turn horse looks like as opposed to a two-turn horse. But I want to hear, before I give you my little thought on that, I want to hear for you, what's the biggest thing that makes a horse that's going to be suited to the one-turn mile as opposed to the two-turn mile?
I think I'm still learning. So I have my thoughts, but I still am trying to learn more about some of these types of things. But to me, it's that not having that first turn and it usually coming not abruptly but semi-abruptly in most situations unless it's a mile and a quarter or whatever, I feel like it takes more out of the horse. It can sometimes set the horse off earlier. There's an opportunity for ground loss. It's just the physics of it. I think it's more difficult to run on a turn than it is to run on a straight. And I think sometimes when they break in a one-turn mile, the horses are allowed to relax. They can kind of just get into stride without having to get set off by that first turn, and then they can make that one run that they're so good at. I think sometimes when they have to negotiate two turns, it sometimes can take a little bit of starch out of their late kick.
I agree with you for a horse with closing kick. I think it's been proven that two turn miles help speed. Being able to run slower. You run slower around a turn than you do in a straightaway. So in that sense, I think the one-turn mile brings stamina into play more than the two-turn mile. And I think that's why I think a horse like Calculator, who we know can finish, can be helped by that one-turn configuration. So I'm with you. He's on my list of three horses. He's not my selection, but he's on my list of three horses that are going to be on all my tickets here. Another horse that I think I'm going to use almost despite myself. I came into this race prejudiced against Frosted and just wanting to beat Frosted and thinking Frosted was a weak morning line favorite given the complexity and depth of this race. The more I looked at the race and the more I looked at all the works Frosted has had since Dubai and thought about how I thought this race was going to shape up, I think he'll be finishing. I think there's enough of a chance that he's the old Frosted that I'm not going to get beat by him, and I'm not just going to use him purely defensively. I am going to use him as an A, not as a lone A. But my number one pick in the race here, and this will come as a surprise to absolutely no one who's ever listened to us talk about this horse on the show, I'm sort of obligated to pick number three, Donworth here, who I think is also among the best closers. The 20-1 may be optimistic, but I don't think there's any way this horse is shorter than 12 or 15-1. I love the freshening. I like the looks of the last work, and I just think this horse, he's just, I do not think this is a horse who creates his own trouble. I think this is a horse who's been unlucky, and I think he's a horse who has a chance to show us that he really is an equine of better quality than he's shown today. But I have to give Mike a chance to rebut, because I know he hates that.
I don't hate Donworth. You're putting words in my mouth.
I'm just kidding. But I do want to hear your thoughts on him.
Well, I mean, you know, you mentioned what you think his odds are going to be. To me, I think the parallel and in the question for me is he's probably going to be similar in price to Blofeld, I would imagine, who they seem like just on the numbers seem like similar horses. They haven't raced a whole lot. You know, Blofeld's only had 8 starts. Donworth has had 7 starts. You know, the best figure was a 104 for Donworth, 103 for Blofeld. 10-1 morning line on Blofeld, 20-1 on Donworth. I think they split the difference maybe at about 12, which, you know, for all the reasons you mentioned, that's a fair price. And if you've, you know, those who have loved Donworth and wanted to bet him at 4-1 in the San Antonio, at 5-2 in the Santa Anita Big Cap, at even at 2-1 last out in the Charlestown Classic, you're now getting a much improved price. And I think that was as much as anything my point was, I'm not going to bet this horse until he becomes a much, much better price. Now is the chance, and if you think that there's still a ton of upside there for a lightly raced horse, and you think that he's going to be able to show it here, he's absolutely worth playing. And, you know, I'm not going to leave him off my tickets if I'm playing pick fours. He's probably a B for me, maybe even a B plus, just based on the amount of value he might add, because I still think we haven't seen the best of him. But I'm still worried that people aren't off the bandwagon, and he may be even as low as 8-10-1.
Where do you stand with him?
On Donworth?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I get it. He's one that I'll use defensively. I don't like the we're not running him, he's got an ankle, we ship him back to California, oh, we're just kidding, it's not an ankle. It was something else, and it was just he was just swollen, but he's fine. He worked well. We're going to bring him back. I mean, I trust Doug O'Neill as a horseman that he's not going to send a sore horse. But just the travel in itself, I'm not a fan of. You know, I think the biggest question in this race for me is that I want to toss Noble Bird and Stanford, but then when you look at the race, like there's really not very much pace in here, considering the type of race that this is. The history of the race, the paces that we see in this race typically. Noble Bird is a forward horse, but he's a two-turn horse that, you know, that gets the lead, but he's not like a blazer, and he's cutting back. And Stanford the same way. He set a slow pace in the Charlestown Classic, and he's not exactly a need-the-lead type. He's forwardly placed. But so, you know, that's kind of my issue that I'm having, is I want to toss those two horses, but I just don't think I can based on the pace.
Are you relating a little bit to Donworth with all the shipping that he's done, with all the shipping that you've done, which you clearly need a break from? Are you thinking Donworth is the same?
Exactly. It takes a toll on your body, I tell you what. It takes a toll. Yeah. It absolutely does.
It's funny you mentioned the pace, because I was going to ask you guys who is going to be on the lead early in here.
Anchor Down.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm marking. Thinking too. You think marking, you know, huh?
From the outside, your hand might be forced a lot. He's got some early pace numbers that wouldn't be surprised if he's in the mix. I'm just throwing out a couple of candidates. Anybody yeah. You got anybody sneaky to make the front in here, Jonathan?
No, not really. That's my predicament. I just don't think any of them are very fast. I mean, if you think about the years past, Shackleford and Private Zone, and mm-hmm. I mean, you know who's going to be on the front. It's these 6 and 7 furlong horses that are stretching out. These are all the speed horses here. I mean, they're all cutting back.
Yeah.
I mean, for the most part. I mean, not Anchor Down, but he set a slow pace in the Westchester. So, I really have no clue, to be honest. I really don't. I could make something up, but I really don't know who will be on the lead.
All right, let's move on to the Manhattan. Oh, no, let's do the recap, and then we'll move on to the Manhattan. For me, I'm going with number 3, Donworth. Also will be using number 5, Frosted, and number 11, I believe it is, Calculator. Jonathan was pretty bullish on number 11, Calculator. You want to throw another number in your official selection for the race?
Yeah, well, Calculator 11, and then Upstart is my second choice.
And Mike, what? Give us a recap of your numbers.
Well, I'm on marking. You know, it's, but probably spreading. He would be my top pick in here, but a lot of the ones you mentioned, I like Calculator quite a bit. You know, shipping is the concern. Last work was really strong, but hasn't worked at Belmont. So there's a little bit of a question mark. Too much of a question mark for me to put him on top, but I'd definitely use him. And then some of the more likely ones a little defensively as well.
All right, let's talk about the Manhattan 1.25 miles. The post times start to stretch out at this point during the day. This is a loaded race. Mike, we'll start with you. What are your thoughts?
Ooh, yeah, this is a loaded race. And, you know, I think you have to decide what you're going to do with the 4 Chad Brown entries, and specifically what you're going to do with Flincher. Is he ready to run his best race? If so, he's probably the best horse in the race, and everybody else is most
probably
likely
about it. I mean, well, yeah, he looks a single to me. I think he just looks super duper strong. I think he looks like he's better than these. Do you have a contrarian view to that?
I do a little bit. I mean, you know, look, I get it. It's a grade one. It's a $1 million race. You know, they want to win, but Chad enters 3 others. Sure, they're not all the same owner. But this is the first start in a while. It's the first start in a 6-year-old campaign. They clearly have bigger goals in mind here. This is a horse that doesn't win as much, even though he's running against better and running in some of the top races in the world. He has a tendency to run second, has a tendency to maybe not fire his best shot. If you're going to try and beat him at any point this year, I think now is the time to do it. You know, and he might be even money against a pretty strong field. I mean, this is nearly Breeders' Cup turf quality field in here. So, you know, look, you got to use him. Your decision becomes how heavily you use him. Do you use him as an A? Do you use him as a lone A? Or do you use him more defensively? And you know, I live dangerously. I'm probably going to use him more as a B or a C, and try and get some value on top with some other A's.
Well, tell us who those would be.
Well, I think it's going to be no surprise to many of the people that listen to the podcast that you know, I like Divisadero, as I'm sure Jonathan is going to talk about. I'll let him give a lot of the reasons for that. I also think Big Blue Kitten, who was kind of in the situation of Flincher last out, needed a race, is probably going to be a little bit better because of it. I expect him to run really well here. Of the Chad ones, he's the one I would probably use most heavily as an A. You know, and even a horse like World Approval, who's improving and is going to be a huge price, I could see him running really well. You know, those would probably be the ones I would lean most heavily on, and we'll see.
Jonathan, what is your thought on this race? Where do you stand on the is Flincher a lone A question?
Well, I'll get to that. I think yes, I think he's a lone A. I mean, I love to be Sedaro. I obviously have a love affair with that horse. That horse is
To you.
Oh, he just doesn't let me down. Although I didn't really capitalize like I needed to on Derby Day. I had two thoughts about this race, and you know, I think sometimes who you like and who you don't like can help you make money equally. I'll start with who I like. Obviously, Flincher makes a lot of sense. And one of the things about Flincher is that, you know, I follow stories and I get very involved with stories in my handicapping. When you show up to a job interview, like, you know, you wear a suit, you know, you wear a suit or a tie just in case. It might be a little bit more of a casual thing, but it's always better to be overprepared because this is a good opportunity for you. There's no way in hell that Chad Brown is not going to have his first serious Judmont horse cranked. I mean, this horse is going to be absolutely ready to rock and roll. There's going to be no, he doesn't want the horse to run third and be like, oh, we're pointing for other things. He wants to show Judmont Farms that they can send all of their top quality turf horses to him, and he can do like his predecessor did with, you know, Bobby Frankel for them, and I think the horse is going to be cranked and ready to rock and roll. I don't like Big Blue Kitten, and I don't think I will like Big Blue Kitten again for the rest of the year. Since he's been switched over to Calumet, he was sold to Calumet. Now he's not going to have the company of his little buddy Shining Copper. If you look at his last two races, he had a rabbit in both of those races. He's not going to have that situation anymore with the new ownership group, and so for that reason, I'm gonna fade him probably for the rest of the summer and until some crazy pace scenario happens.
I think that makes sense. I think that all makes sense. And yeah, I mean, I just don't buy the point Mike made about Flincher in the running second. I mean, he's running second to superstar horses who'd beat this field by four lengths. I mean, there's not a race showing on his PPs that doesn't win this handily. So, I mean, maybe you could make a case about the post, or maybe something doesn't work out, but for me, I'm pretty comfortable putting like 80% of my play through him. I mean, I think it's a deep enough field and you never know. And the thought of putting in some backups, World Approval, certainly very impressive race last time. I think you can argue that given the fractions there that he was even better than our guy Divisadero in the race. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. One of the ones I might use as a backup. Ironicus is a horse who probably ran better than it looked last time between how quickly he came home, between how much wider he was than the rest of the field. Is he up to beating Flincher? Probably not, but if I need a horse, if I'm going to play a small backup ticket, I might put him on there.
In Mike's defense, I will say about Flincher, if there is a reason in which you want to try to find a reason to play against him, it could be that it's a mile and a quarter. He's going to have a quarter of a mile less to work with, which
short for him. Obviously, that's a legitimate fear.
Yeah. It could create some situations where, you know, a little bit of trouble here, a little bit of trouble there, a little bit of a late move here, a little bit of an early move there could end up being a problem for him. So, you know, I guess that's one thing that you could look at. But I feel like his class is going to we'll get him through no matter what.
I got an interesting stat before we move on from Flincher. I don't know if you guys saw me tweet this out yesterday. But, you know, of course, Chad's got four in here. The jockeys are Johnny V, Irid, Joe Bravo, and on Flincher is Javier Castellano, of course, the Eclipse Award winner. Quick quiz for you guys. Last 2 years on the NYRA circuit, what do you think the record is for the Chad Javier combo in graded stakes? Graded stakes on the NYRA circuit the last 2 years.
I wouldn't have a clue.
Donovan?
Tell me how many races and I'll tell you how many wins.
25 starts.
12.
One. And you know how many else hit the board? 2 seconds and 3/3. 17 of the 25 were 5-1 or lower.
Do you have it up? Can you name some of the horses?
Oh yeah, the one winner was DeCita. The 2 seconds were Danza Cavallo and Bobby's Kitten. The thirds were Strict Compliance, Raise the Bar, and Gift Box in the Remsen. Off the board, and I'll start with the lowest odds at 9-5 off the board. Real Solution. You also had at 5-2 Alterite. At 2-1 Partisan Politics in the Lake George last year. Partisan Politics again in the Ms. Grillo, Sweet Acclaim, Majestic Affair. These are some decent horses. Ball Dancing in the Just a Game last year finished 8th at 3-1.
My
point here is not that, Chad's not giving him his best horses. My point is more that the market is overvaluing these horses, at least recently, with the Chad-Javier combo. And I don't think it necessarily is a knock against Flincher. It was just something that really surprised me.
It's an interesting bit of trivia. There's no causality there, and there's no way that's going forward. But you do make a point that's valid, Mike, which is that it does show something that should be intuitive to anybody. When you have a top trainer and a top jockey, in many instances, the crowd is going to – everybody sees that, and those horses are – there's a they're going to be overbet a lot of the time. I do buy that as a little bit of a nugget there, but it wouldn't make me think twice about betting that combination.
And I'm not saying this is why the horse is going to lose. I just thought it was really interesting because you compare that to him with all of his other jockeys in the last 2 years on the NIRA circuit and graded stakes. They went at a 25% rate.
It's very hard for, I think, leading jockeys. I've never really studied this, but my gut would be that leading riders and ROI studies can be very tricky because of just how easy it is for the crowd to spot that. It's a subject that's actually worth taking a look at a little bit deeper if we had the data to go into. But for me, you know, I'm interested in stats that give me pause. That one does not.
Okay, right. Fair enough about that one.
So it's number 10, Flincher, for me and Jonathan. For Mike, number 1, World Approval. Number 5, Big Blue Kitten. And number 11, Divisadero. Let's move on to the big one, the Belmont Stakes. No Triple Crown on the line, but still a fascinating handicapping contest race and a fascinating puzzle for us to try to get to the bottom of. We've got about 20 minutes left. Should we try to go through the field on this one rather than just giving our thoughts the way we have with the other races? You guys game for that? We'll have to be a little succinct.
Let's do it.
All right, let's start with Governor Malibu. Mike had a funny joke on Twitter about this horse. I'll let you repeat that if you remember it.
Oh, I just said something about, I think you're referring to Christophe Clement using the Peter Pan as a prep and how that has worked. Yeah, it never works, yeah.
Of course, being facetious, this horse definitely bears a superficial resemblance at least to Tonalist from a couple of years ago. Jonathan, anything for you on Governor Malibu, thinking about vertical exotics, horizontal exotics, etc.?
No, the horse ran well against Unified. I was against him that day. He didn't do anything that really made me say, oh, that horse is going to run huge in the Belmont. He just won't be used by me. If he runs well, I won't do well in the race as a whole.
Mike, you?
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned a resemblance to Tonalist. I think it's a very superficial one, mostly due to the prep race and to the trainer. If you squint really hard, maybe you can see it. But I don't think he's as good as Tonalist, especially those prior races. He's going to have to improve quite a bit to win this one. Maybe he can. Maybe would use more defensively underneath. Of the four newcomers that haven't run in a Triple Crown race, he's probably the most interesting. But if you like him, you're basically making the case that Christoph's trying to repeat history and that Unified would probably be the second choice in here. And he was within 3/4 of a length of him there. I guess that's the case for him, but I don't love him.
Yeah, for me, I agree with everything you guys said. I would probably stick in for third and fourth, thinking about prize and supers, but that would be the limit of my interest. Mike, we'll keep it with you for your thoughts on number 2, Destin.
Destin's a little interesting here. I mean, a lot of people thought Destin probably was going to be a little short in the Kentucky Derby. Perhaps he ran that way, had a little bit of trouble. You know, not the most trouble of any of the runners in here that skipped the Preakness. But he could move forward off that effort. And if you think that the Tampa form will carry to Belmont, he's certainly a player here. And I wouldn't be shocked if he wins. I'm not going to use him most heavily on top, but I picked him in the paper for DRF. I picked him fourth, and I think he's one of the top four contenders.
I find it interesting that DRF no longer asks me to put my picks in the paper. The theory I have about it is the first race I ever picked for DRF was the Belmont, the Tonalist one, so I had Tonalist in there. And then last year I picked American Pharoah. I believe in all three, at least two of the three, maybe all three. Maybe they just thought I was making everybody else look bad. Anyway, Jonathan, what do you think about Destin?
I actually thought Destin was very interesting initially until the news about Gettysburg, which I'm sure we'll get to eventually. You know, he felt like the type of horse that was going to get, you know, I think Todd, of not of all the trainers, but at least he's proven it to me a few times, he understands the value of being forward in this race. Palace Malice, commissioner who, in my opinion, had no business running as well as he did, but I think it was the way that he was ridden. I remember back in the day when I first got started and really getting heavy into handicapping, he put Dunkirk on the lead. And I thought Destin was going to get that trip. I thought he was going to get that forward trip, and now I'm a little bit concerned with Gettysburg showing up. So he makes sense. Like I said earlier, if you were against him in the Derby, the reason you were against him was because of the time off. Now he's coming into a more normal pattern of what we expect from horses with, you know, in regards to time between races. And maybe now he's sitting on a big race. You know, he's at a Giants Causeway. That shouldn't cause any issues. So, you know, and he was a half to Creative Cause. You know, he's one that I'll use for sure. You know, he's probably a B for me, an underneath type in trots.
For me, looks like he might be a Tampa Bay horse for course, who I think was flattered by the way the track was playing Tampa Derby Day. I just can't have him. I mean, maybe I wouldn't argue with anybody who wanted to use underneath. He'll knock me out of multis, though. Let's move on to number three, Cherry Wine, and we'll keep it with you, Jonathan. Do you think that you think he's going to get any kind of pace set up to set up the late run that he's shown in the Bluegrass and the Preakness this time around?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I've done okay in the Belmont. You know, I've been to eight derbies. I've won one derby. So I'm not bragging, but I've done really well in the Belmont just from the simple fact that I've ignored the closers don't win that race. It just doesn't happen. I mean, I can't remember one that I've been at where it's just been some, you know, horse that was 24 lengths out of it that comes flying late. It's just not that type of race. He's the type of horse that I just fade, especially off of that second that he got. And I mean this in the nicest way, but I wouldn't say the uneducated, but let me say the novice better is going to love that running line, you know, that he ran second and he was flying late and blah, blah, blah. And now he gets
more
ground.
Yeah.
And I think he'll be overbet in that regard, and he won't be anywhere on anything for me.
Yeah, last time was the time for me as well. I would still probably throw in thirds and fourths. Mike, are you any more optimistic about Cherry Wine?
No, as closers go, he's not my favorite in the race.
Number four, Sudden Breaking News. Now, to me, this is the closer who I have just a bit of an intuition might end up sitting a little bit closer today than he has in the past. And in that sense, for me, I like him considerably better than the others I would characterize as deep closers going into the race. Mike, do you see a case for Sudden Breaking News?
So you're saying he's the closer.
Closer.
And I think that's what Mike Smith has said that he wants to do with him. He gets the notable rider switch. He said he's going to keep him, get him more in the race early. He's interesting. I don't know if he's good enough to win. Maybe he is. I think he's kind of everybody's wise guy horse, and in fact, well, there are two wise guy horses. Looking at the early odds on Public Handicapper, he's 9-2. He's the second choice in here. And of course, that's just the Public Handicapper picks, so it's not real money, but there's a lot of weight on this horse. There's a lot of people picking him. I could see it. I'm not going to use him on top, and in fact, as closers go, I'll get to him in a little bit. There's another one I like a little bit better than him.
I will definitely be using Sudden Breaking News as an A. The 9-2 doesn't even sound, I mean, it's a little light, but it doesn't sound crazy to me. Jonathan, where do you stand with Sudden Breaking News?
Yeah, he's probably my pick. Obviously, you know, I got to look at the workout report and things could change, but, you know,
so Love coming to the forefront?
Well, yeah, I mean, I just think that he's going to get the same trip that that Drosselmeyer got. I mean, Drosselmeyer was considered a closer, not nearly as deep as I think most people think Sudden Breaking News is, but Drosselmeyer was ridden more forwardly with Mike, first time Mike, and I think that he's going to get a very similar trip. I think he can, you know, I think what a lot of times with these closers is you look at his PPs and you see, oh, he's 22 links out, 10 links out, 11 links out, 15 links out. If I'm not mistaken, I think almost every single one of those races was like meltdown paces. And so, of course, he's going to be that far out of it. He's going at a shorter distance. I think he's going to be closer. I don't think he's going to be nearly as far back as many would believe. I think he'll get the jump on a horse like Exaggerator, who will be getting tired since he's a one-turn horse. And that's probably who I'm going to go with. It's probably me. So.
I like how you snuck that in there. We'll talk more. I'm going to let that lie for now, but we'll talk more about it in a bit.
And the rare first-time Ridgely angle, too. Don't forget that. Have you guys heard that
are
story?
Are you going to be the second DRF employee this week, Mike, to go on a long whole thing about a horse's testicles? Is that what I'm hearing here?
No, I'm not. But I just thought it was interesting that after testing, that you know, they didn't do it in Oaklawn, they didn't do it at Remington Park, but you know, after testing, they test horses after races and after wins. And after his run in the Kentucky Derby, they said, whoa, this horse has a lot more testosterone than you'd expect to see in a gelding. And lo and behold, it turns out that he's got two undescended testicles. So, that's why you're seeing first-time ridgeling. They thought he was a gelding, but they're just tucked up.
I would really like to continue along these lines, but we don't have the time. I'm just not gonna add anything to that. Let's just move on to number 5, Stradivari. I was excited about his chance in the Preakness. I thought he ran pretty well there. He's the other one for me. I could see him getting a really nice journey and living up to some of the potential. Some would say hype, but for me, he's the other in here that I will clearly have as an A horse. Do you think I'm succumbing to the hype, Mike, or do you think will Stradivari be a big part of your plans in this race?
No, he's my pick. I think he ran really well in the Preakness, was up somewhat close to that pace that melted down, was wide, was a little rank early. You know, the reason I was against him in the Preakness is I thought it was too much too soon. He's got a little bit more bottom in here. Now in the third start as a 3-year-old, I expect him to run a big race, get a good trip, and I'll be using him on top.
Jonathan?
Yep, same for me. I'm not going to use him on. I mean, he's an A for me for sure. I like the horse. He'd be my second choice, but I'll use him and Sudden Breaking News as A horses. I think the argument, like we talked about, the same with Destin is, if you didn't like him in the Preakness, it was because you thought he was a lightly raced horse and it was too much too soon. He ran well, ran through that. He's supposed to improve into this race. Todd has shown his ability to get horses ready for this type of race, and. I think he's a talented type for sure, and I think that he can actually make a really big step forward. I think this situation fits him much better than the Preakness, obviously.
Agreed.
It seemed like a race he was going to get a lot out of, even though the 3 weeks, to be honest, for Todd Pletcher's training methods, 3 weeks back almost qualifies as a wheel back, but I feel like it's going to work for this specific horse. Putting you on the spot here, Mike, but have you done any digging about Pletcher off 3 weeks rest in Formulate?
I haven't, in Formulator it's the last 5 years, so, we won't be able to go back completely, you know, as far back as I would like in some cases, but, I think he's done okay. I'm doing it kind of on the fly. I'll just do 3 weeks in graded stakes right now. Let's see what we get. Do you want routes as well, or just all graded stakes?
Yeah, do all graded stakes in 3 weeks.
Okay.
I'm curious.
Within 3 weeks, 15 for 78, that's 19%, $1.65 ROI. The lowest priced winner was San Pablo at 4-5 in the Island. The biggest price was Azar last year in the With Anticipation at 11-1. 40% hit the board. It's not something he does all the time, but it's not necessarily a negative.
No, I mean, the ROI is no bueno, but that's a result of a lot of his horses getting overbet as well. The win percentage is probably in line with his norms. All right, folks, we got about 10 minutes left, and we got a whole lot of horses to get through, and we've sort of each tipped our hand as to our selection. So just keep in mind we should try to speed through. Gettysburg, Just a Rabbit, anything further to say about him, Mike?
Just a Rabbit, I think they're trying to recreate the Arkansas Derby.
Jonathan.
What's up, Doc?
Oh, it's a shame you had that mic trouble. That line could have landed all the better. we'll deal with number 7 and 8 in tandem. They are Seeking the Soul and Forever Doro for Dallas Stewart. We've talked about him a lot on the show and the ability he seems to have to get horses to finish in Triple Crown races and some of the giant prices he's landed on the board. Jonathan, for you, do either of these have a place on your vertical tickets?
I think they're going to both be 30-1, so you might as well use them in the third spot, because do you really want to get beat by that? You know, and I think that one of them will be ridden forwardly. And if I think maybe Seeking the Soul will be ridden forwardly. You know, Jose Ortiz is pretty aggressive. Maybe Forever Doro is ridden forwardly, but you know that those pedigrees, both the 50 pedigrees, they're meant to stay. And it just feels like one of them could get a piece of it. I don't think either one of them will win, but I'll use them definitely in the third spot.
Anything higher than third for you, Mike, or not even that for the 7
well,
and the 8?
Well, you know, here's a stat. Last 2 years on dirt with maiden winners last out, Dallas Stewart has had 14 runners. No wins, but 7 seconds. 7 of his 14 ran second on dirt after a maiden win, including, of course, Taylor Verve in the Preakness last year. He's had a couple others that ran second in stakes races. So yeah, maybe you bump him up to second based on those stats. I don't think either one of them is good enough to win. But yeah, at a huge price, why not try and get at least one of them underneath?
Number 9, Trojan Nation. His day was pretty much over when he drew the one post for the Derby. Just looking at the figure of the Wood Memorial, he doesn't seem too far out of this. However, a lot of people have questioned the figures for that race, suggesting that they're high, including Andy Beyer himself when we talked about that race on a previous webinar. For me, that's enough to not consider Trojan Nation here. Mike, what do you think?
He'll be a really, really, really legitimate contender next out when he's in a maiden race.
Jonathan.
Ass.
Number 10 is the superstar. He's Lonnie. He's making friends everywhere he goes with his studdish behavior and incredible work ethic. In fact, I think they just took him out for another gallop the wrong way, 5 miles around Belmont, as I finished this sentence. The story's great. I don't know if I could put him anywhere on my tickets. I just think there's a gap between the level of fame and the level of talent actually showed in the afternoon. Not that his races in the last two have been all that bad, but he's just kind of not for me. Jonathan, where are you with Lonnie?
I mean, the story is all interesting, and the angles are all interesting. Ooh, he's being trained different than American horses, and he's going to have so much bottom to him, and blah, blah, blah. But he still got a setup in the last race and ran fifth. He's 27 lengths out of the fastest Preakness pace ever. If it was a Wednesday at Aqueduct or a Wednesday at Santa Anita, there's no way I'd play the horse, so I'm fading him. If he runs well, then I'll be silly.
I think you and Lonnie follow each other on Twitter, Mike. Is that enough to get him on your tickets?
Actually, I don't think I follow him. He follows me. I usually don't follow horses. although I do have
pretending to be horses.
I do have a Twitter group. You know, if you look at my list, I do have a Twitter list of people pretending to be animals. I'm kind of with you guys. Lonnie, you know, he's an interesting story. He's interestingly enough, too, if you look at the odds on Public Handicapper, he's 7-1 currently now. 60 of the 574 picks right now for the Belmont Stakes are on Lonnie in Public Handicapper. That's crazy. If the real money is anything like that, he's a complete fade, at least on top for me. I could maybe see him hitting the board, but I'd want him to hit the board at a big price, not at 8-10-1. And I got a stat for you. He's trying to win the Belmont Stakes after running in the Derby and Preakness, not hitting the board in either. Since 1963, 22 horses have done that. The only winner came in 1964, and that was Quadrangle, and I think he maybe beat like 5 or 6 horses in the Belmont. So he's kind of up against it, not just running, you know, form-wise, but history-wise as well.
That is a stat that I would probably expect to go forward. One other thing about Lonnie, if you do end up following him on Twitter, definitely don't open his DMs. Number 11 is your favorite exaggerator. He is your Preakness winner. We've talked about him a whole lot on the show. For me, I'm not as negative as some, so let's start with probably the most negative person in all of horse racing about Exaggerator. That's Jonathan Kinchin. Jonathan, why do you hate this horse?
Well, I guess it started with like me just thinking, you know, he's a one-turn horse that wasn't that good. Then he proved to me that he is a really good horse, but I still believe he's a one-turn horse. I mean, he hasn't done anything to prove to me that he's not. I mean, I know that sounds crazy. He did run second in the Kentucky Derby, and he won the Preakness, but he's gotten, like, unbelievable setups. I mean, he's gotten huge fast paces. He got a wet track in the Preakness. He got a wet track in the Santa Anita Derby. And if you weren't there, maybe you forgot, but it kind of was wet fast on Derby Day. It poured like an hour before the race. And if you look at, you know, go to Google and look up Kentucky Derby pictures and look at the horses. They're like covered in like wet mud, like dirt, like, you know, when they're turning for home. And he's gotten it his way. He's gotten it his way three times in a row. And so I could still be wrong that he's going to be a great two-turn horse, but he just has to show it to me one more time. And we're going to go back to the trainer speak, and I know that he's kind of already proven it wrong, but and maybe Keith DeSormo is being tongue-in-cheek, but he said it 5 months ago that this horse, there's a possibility this horse is a one-turn horse. Now I'm expected that he's a deep closer who's going to win the Belmont? Like, no way. There's no way that I will use this horse on top. If he beats me, I'll lose again.
I'm with you. I respect his accomplishments more than you do, and I'm not as convinced necessarily about the one-turn thing. But I just think in value for money terms, there's just no way I can use this horse on top. I don't even think defensively. I think the value of the race, the value of the Maltese, is getting this horse out at a short price. Mike, will you be as cavalier as JK and I, or will you be having Exaggerator on the top of your ticket?
Probably only defensively and only with prices in other legs. You know, I probably wouldn't have any sort of pick fours that included Flincher, Exaggerator, and the other favorites in the earlier legs, because there's just not enough value based on my opinion, which is that kind of along the lines of you guys, maybe not quite as strong as you. I mean, look, he's a really, really good horse. He may be one of the best ones, if not the best one, going forward in this race. But based on the value, based on some of the setups that he's gotten, based on some of the other uncertainties, I don't want to use him at a short price, and I'm going to try and beat him on top at least. I picked him for third in the paper. I could see him running third. He runs his race every time. I'm just hoping that race is good enough for second or third on Saturday.
I will say this. If it does rain, I think at this point we can say unexpectedly rain, I would then go into a defensive use mode. Let's deal with number 12 and 13 in tandem. They are deep closers, Brody's Cause and Creator. Jonathan, you've already made it very clear your opinion about deep closers in this race. Do you have any positives to add on Brody's Cause or Creator before we kick it to Mike?
Yeah, you know, here's the thing. It's like, yes, I am against deep closers, but I think one of these two horses is going to be ridden a little bit more forwardly. I don't know which one it is, and if you know, let me know so I can not have to bet the other one. I think one of them will be ridden forward, if not both of them, especially from their posts out there. Not that there's a huge rush to get to the first turn, but and I think they'll both finish, so I think both of them are very likely to be involved in the trifecta in some way, and one of them could jump up and win it. But I'm definitely going to use both of them as B types with a little bit of action on top and tries and stuff like that in case one of them does get forward like I expect that they will.
Mike, you have something nice to say about one of these horses. Which is it?
Creator. Creator, I think, is... I think he's probably the best closer in the race. If you watch the Derby and key in on him, he was ahead of the other deep closers, or at least ahead of Sudden Breaking News before he got just wiped out completely at the top of the lane, down by the rail. He actually ended up re-rallying and passing horses after losing a lot of ground. It was a sneaky, sneaky good effort that I think a lot of people are going to overlook. I think he'll be a little bit more forwardly placed. He's got his rabbit in there. I picked him second. I wouldn't be surprised if he's maybe the value on top, and I think he could surprise in this race.
All right, now thinking, Jonathan, back to your point about which one of these might be more likely to show unexpected speed, just from a rider point of view, wouldn't that be 12, Brody's Cause?
Yeah, I think so. And then also from the perspective of Windstar and the whole idea of the rabbit, you would assume that it's going to be Brody's Cause.
That's a great point. Why would you have a rabbit and then lay closer to the rabbit? I mean, you could you see that type of thing in the UK sometimes with rabbits. They it's not like they're that far away from their rabbit. They just want that extra even pace to stretch the field a little. But I kind of don't think that's what's happening here, given Creator's shown in the last four lines of his PPs.
One more note about Creator. Look at the jockey switch. Look at Irid at Belmont. He knows how to ride this track. I think let's not overlook that, too.
I take the point, but it's not like he rides a lot of mile and a half dirt races.
No.
And it is kind of a unique deal. And Irid, as much as, you know, I really do like him, he is super patient. And that might play into what Jonathan's fears for the closers are. But I think you do make a compelling case about the Derby trip, Mike. I mean, for me, I could see using either one of these horses as backups. But for me, the story of the race for me is going to be if I can get number four, Sudden Breaking News, or number five, Stradivari home. And it sounded like in terms of an on-top lean for Jonathan, it's number four, Sudden Breaking News. And for Mike, number five, Stradivari. That sound like a good summation of our opinions in that race?
There it is.
Yeah, and I'd put Creator almost equally with Stradivari. And again, I don't understand why you think Sudden Breaking News is going to be more forward. Maybe it's the Mike Smith thing, but at least in the Derby, yeah, he was much more further out of it than,
it's
say, Creator was.
I think he'll give him the Drosselmeyer trip.
Fair enough.
I think John hit the nail. They knocked that one right out of the park. It could be wrong, but that for me is the factor there. And I just project a good trip for him, and I think he's a really good horse. So we'll see what happens. It's going to be an exciting day. Hopefully we've helped you folks in constructing some of your pick four tickets. We ran a little long today. Thank you for sticking with us. I want to thank Jonathan Kinchin. I want to thank Mike Hogan. Most of all, thank all of you for listening in the first place. And keep the positive comments coming. We will return to our Bad Beat Contest idea next week. We'll have some announcements regarding that. So many great entries. If folks have any more feedback, questions, anything at all you need from us, you can hit us up podcast@drf.com. We look forward to receiving those missives. We hope you all have a fantastic Belmont Stakes Day and that you win all your photos.